Thanks a lot for Sansik's introduction. Today I'm going to talk about exotic metal and metal in grid transition. So let me begin by acknowledging my wonderful collaborators, Yichen, Mengxin, Zhuxi, and my advisor, Chen Ke, from University of California, Santa Barbara, and Chaoming from Cornell University. Okay, so this talk will be based on these two papers. The first one is still in preparation, and then the second one can be found on archive. Okay, so very broadly speaking, quantum states of matter have two types. There's gap quantum matter and also gapless quantum matter. The two types of states have a sharp distinction at zero temperature. For example, if we are thinking about the charge gap, in a fully gapped state will have infinite resistivity, but in a gapless state can have a finite value of resistivity. Okay, and furthermore, the gapless states include both quantum critical points in which you may have emergent Lorentz symmetry, and there's also a metal phase in which you have a Fermi surface. And today we will focus on two-dimensional materials. There's actually something very interesting about the resistivity in two dimensions. If you do some dimensional analysis, you would get a Planck constant divided by a fundamental electrical charge, A square, and another vector. And the A here is certain length scale, and then the D is in a spatial dimension. So you immediately see that D equals two is spatial, and you may have a universal you may have a universal value of the resistivity in two dimensions. So which may imply there are many universal physics are related. The most famous example is probably quantum Hall effect that the people have observed precisely quantized particles at one over n times the resistivity constant, n is an integer. This is a very universal phenomenon. You may have different samples which have different impurities, different geometries, but the plateaus are precisely the same. But today, our focus will be metals and quantum critical points. And this number also shows up in very interesting ways in these two scenarios. In the metal, there's actually upper bound for the so-called golden metal, which is good in the sense that you have a semi-classical well-packaged description of mobile electrons. And going beyond this bound, theoretical understanding would be challenging. And around the quantum critical point, there are actually many things are universal, including transport properties. For example, if we are looking at a superfluid to insulate the transition of charged boson, then there's actually order one universal resistivity. I will tell you more details about this concept later in the talk. Okay. And okay, so metal and quantum critical point, can they be combined in certain way? And is there anything interesting related? And certainly the answer is yes. There's an interaction-driven continuous metal to insulator transition proposed and discussed by Sansik, Patrick, and later more systematically by Santio, which involves spin charge separation. So one electron is fractionized into one boson and one fermionic spin boson carries the electrical charge. Okay, so there's a prediction of the so-called universal resistivity jump at the critical point. The statement is that if you start from the metal side, which has a finite value of resistivity, and you approach the quantum critical point, and right at the quantum critical point, the value is not continuous, and then there's a jump, or the one jump, which is universal. And you're going, and after you move into the insulator side, you have infinite resistivity.
Okay, sorry, what is it?
Yeah. Yeah, please. Question? Probably there's something in the chat
You can continue.
Okay, and I will mention again later in the talk, and we can discuss in details about all the concepts involved in this particular slide. Okay, so far, I have told you our expectations from theoretical understanding, but in reality, in experiments, number trio can behave in a strange way and going beyond people's expectations. So very famously, there are many bad metal behaviors. For example, this is older data from 1970s, and you clearly see the value of the resistivity can go beyond the bounds at a certain temperature. And then the second data is from a very recent experimental observation of a metal insulator transition in transition metal dichocogenides on moray super lattice by Kamara's group. So you can see there are two types of curves and there are two tendencies when you go into the zero temperature, when resistivity going up, that's the insulator phase, and the resistivity going down, that's the metal phase. And then there's a transition in between. And you can estimate the value of the jump of the resistivity at a critical point, it turns out to be rather large. So you can see this is the value of the resistivity quantum, and the y-axis is in Mohr scale instead of a linear scale. So this is a huge jump. So these are really
question. I'm always confused by this data. So for the Cornell experiment, the quantum critical behavior, meaning the evidence for continuous phase transition, is seen at the temperature range below like 70 Kelvin to like 4 to 5 Kelvin, where so the curve labeled by EC seems to have a power law dependence on temperature. When the temperature is above like 4 to 5 Kelvin until 70-80 Kelvin, and below 4 to 5 Kelvin, it saturates to a finite value. So my question is, do you think the finite saturation should be attributed to the critical point, or should it be attributed to some other crossover physics?
That's certainly possible due to, okay. So actually this transition is complicated, right? There are actually many length scales associated with this transition. For example, later I will discuss that there could be multiple gauge fields involved in this transition. And then there may be some, it's possible to due to some confinement crossover or so there are many complicated details about the main length scale. I think it's possible to due to certain crossover effects, I think.
Yeah, then I suppose you are right at the critical point and mm-hmm. at zero temperature, do you think the resistivity corresponding to this transition is finite or infinite?
You mean the value? I mean, and you mean, for example, the delta rho?
This delta rho may not be attributed to the critical point. It may be due to some crossover physics, not the critical point.
But I think precisely this data is at a very low temperature, like 1.5 for hundreds of milo Kelvin. I think this is the precise value of the critical value of the resistivity from the data should be the critical point and the property of the critical point. But when you are going to higher temperature, the behavior could correspond to a certain crossover effect.
I actually think the higher temperature behavior corresponds to the critical point. The low temperature behavior corresponds to something else. But maybe please go ahead. We can talk about this later.
Can I just ask one question that I'm trying to ask before, but my technology is stopping me.
Yeah, yeah.
So in a clean system at zero temperature, the resistivity would actually be zero outside her critical point. Is that correct?
Not zero, it's a finite, it's a metal. It's not a superconductivity.
But for a metal, normally the resistivity goes to zero at zero temperature, unless you have disorder, right?
Yeah. Unless you have disorder. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Sure. Sure. Okay, so in view of this data, it is really puzzling about this a large value of the resistivity. We are wondering if electron interaction is doing something dramatic. Okay, so in this talk, I try to propose a kind of a unified simple picture for the bad conductor behavior at low temperature, which is given by charge fractionalization. Okay, so this is the topic. This is the content of today's talk. There are two separate topics. One is about the metal. The other is about the metal insulator transition. And in the first part, I will discuss two examples with a simple physical picture, and hope that can help you appreciate some properties and general features of charge fractionalization in metallic state. And in the second part, the second part is really motivated by the data from the transition metal that you organize measurement, and I will try to construct a metal to insulate the transition with large resistivity jump. So then in the first part, let me begin by explaining why there's there's an upper bound, why there's a bound at all. Okay, so recall what we learned in solid state physics. The simplest description of transport of electrons is the Joule formula. The first one is a general expression, the fermion mass, the density, electrical charge square, and the scattering mean time scale. Okay? And in two dimensions, it reduces to this form. Okay? So it's a resistivity quantum times 1 over Kf fermion vector times the mean free path. Okay? So to have well-defined wave packet for mobile electrons, we need a Kf times Lm larger than 1. So this is due to the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Okay? So in this way, you can see there's a bound for the value of the resistivity. And if you have a higher value than this bound, you no longer have a semi-classical picture of the electron. Today, I will tell you a construction. Even you go beyond this bound, you still have very simple semi-classical picture, but of a different quasi-particle instead of an electron. Okay? So we consider each pattern is a spin 1/2 fermion with an electrical charge, which is E over N. Okay? And at the same time, Zn, gauge charge, and then the Zn is an odd integer. So you clearly see that the gauge invariant states include fermions with an odd charge and half integer spin, and the bosons with integer charge and integer spin. Okay? So electron Hilbert space will be recovered in this construction. And we can apply what we know about the Joule formula, the simplest level, okay? So to these patterns. And the electrical charge replaced by fractional charge, and the fermion vector replaced by the Kf star of the pattern. It depends on the details of the final structure, but that doesn't matter for the general discussion. Okay? So to make the story as simple as possible, we consider the impurity scattering as the Hadamard sphere-like potential, which is insensitive to temperature. So this is the simplest toy model right here. In the TMD system, in the Moray super lattice, I will discuss another construction later, which also which have some natural reason to expect rationalization. Okay, so for this toy model, some important features. The Dn gauge field is gapped, so the patterns are nearly free at no temperature. So the pattern wave packet is well defined when the Kf star times Lm larger than 1. So this gives rise to an upper bound, which is much larger than the electron expectation. There's a factor n squared enhancement in this simple toy model. Okay, so you can see the good metal of patterns is actually a very, can actually be a very bad metal in conventional sense.
So but are you going to take n really large then?
It does not have to, right? So as long as you go beyond, let me see. As long as you go beyond this bound, it's really puzzling how to describe in terms of electrons. But right here, you can see if n equals to 3, for example, n is only all the integer, 1, 3, 5, 6. Right? So if you take a 3, it's already 9 times larger. I already can be a very bad metal. No need to be really large.
But is this inequality where you're strict inequality, or is it just like less than or the same order as? Like,
sorry, I didn't understand the question. No,
well, I'm saying whether, I guess 10 is sort of still of order one. Again, maybe this is
you're asking finally this upper bound is the order one. Is that question? It can be large. For example, n equals to 5, you have 25 times the reducibility constant. And that's certainly a very, very bad metal already. No need to be is so large. N equals to 5 or 7 is already a huge number here.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
But if n equals to 5 or 7, shouldn't you need some reason to justify that?
But essentially, what I mean is that from a simple theoretical construction, n can be any odd integer. But if you really want to be very serious and do the experimental measurement to verify the value, you could do like a short log measurement or something to measure the fractional charge. So it could be determined by experiment in principle if this is the case, if this is what's happening. This is a simple proposal.
I guess a question related to what Dominic asked is, for good metal, is it easy to saturate or close the bond?
It's not easy. In ordinary metal, like what we have in our home, like for example, you have a copper or anything, it's a way below. So this is a very strange behavior. If you even close or go upper the bond, it's not normal in our daily life.
Then if n is small, then it's still hard to have bad metal behavior, right?
Sure. What I mean is that the essential message here is that within this simple construction of patterns with fractional charge, you could have a semi-classical description for a certain value of the resistivity, even you go beyond the bound of the electron. So go beyond the bound of this electron value, you have no idea how to describe using very simple picture. It's puzzling because if you only know electron is a charge carrier in a system, then within this simple construction, it's possible that it can explain the larger value than our expectation. So this is too simple at this stage. I mean, so just a toy model.
Okay.
So in your model, do you expect say large Lorentz number?
That's a very good point. Yeah, I will discuss that.
And actually, question is in experiments, what is the Lorentz number?
Oh, it's still the same definition as an electron. So you can measure the thermal transport and the electrical transport. So you have a coefficient, the response, like a thermal conductivity and the electrical conductivity and the thermal electrical conductivity. I will discuss all these in details later. You know, just a few slides later, like one or two slides later. Any other question? I'm going to continue. So one important thing I want to say is that although the gauge field is gap at zero, is gap at the low temperature, it can do something very interesting at the finite temperature and will participate in the behavior of the patterns. Okay. So at a very high temperature, at a very high energy, we always have electron model. This is almost always in the UV completion of any low energy effective theory of in the condensed matter system. Okay, So in addition to the deconfined phase, there's certainly a finite temperature confinement crossover regime, which means each pattern starts to feel there's a force and a confining force between them, but they can still hop independently on the lattice. And if you keep increasing the temperature, the pattern will confine. So which means n of them are glued together and they can only hop together on the lattice. So this is electron hopping at a very high temperature. So this may give rise to very interesting behavior of the transport properties in this construction. So this is our expectation for the temperature dependence of the resistivity. So start from zero temperature, we expect like the pattern from molecular like behavior, there's a power two, T to the power two increase at starting from zero temperature. But this is due to pattern-pattern interaction, similar to the thermoliquid electrode electron. This interaction is, however, suppressed by the fractional charge. And when the confinement length is of the order of the mean free path, the semi-classical picture starts to break down. This is simply because during each scattering event, the pattern will start to feel the confining force. So it's no longer totally free particles anymore. And we will undergo a confinement crossover regime. And in the simple construction under these assumptions, it's a bad metal to a good metal crossover. And when the confinement length reaches the lattice constant, patterns are fully confined. And after that, we have the electron from molecular like behavior. To be honest, we are still looking for experimental realization of this particular curve. This is a very simple physical picture, so we think it's appealing to us. Okay. Then this is Santik's question. What about other thermoelectric properties? Okay. So in general, we have the electrical current and the heat current response to electric field and the temperature gradient. In total, there are four transport coefficients. Right? At a very low temperature, the semi-classical dynamics of the patterns have this form. So we can assume certain generic pattern bends and the pattern are very curvature. So only difference comparing to electron is that the wave packet, the momentum response to E and the B field have this suppression due to fractional charge. And combined with semi-classical Boltzmann transport, we can calculate all the coefficients so systematically. And this is our result. So the thermal power or somebody called feedback coefficient will have an N factor comparing to electron model. And the Lorentz number is even and has an even larger factor, so n squared. So which means the Wiedemann-Franz law is strongly violated at a low temperature. And when we increase the temperature after the confinement crossover, all these numbers, so both thermal power and the Lorentz number will reduce significantly to the electron value. So that's a 1/n and 1/n². Ratio. Okay, so to recap, the electrical transport is suppressed while the thermal transport is enhanced. And the physical picture is very simple because each pattern carries the fractional charge, but then it carries the same amount of entropy as an electron. Okay, so this is why the interesting property in transport.
Question? So, I think prior to this Maury systems, there have been quite a few examples of bad metals found experimentally, right? Could you remind me what are the thermal transport look like? Does Wiedemann-Franz apply there? Or,
normally there are certain violation because they are. Normally there are some Wiedemann-Franz law violation simply because due to strong electron-electron interactions something exotic happen, and you have more than charge carrier low energy degrees of freedom, all the degrees of freedom will participate in the thermal transport, right? So in that sense, this will be violated simply because in addition to charge carrier, there are more exotic degree of freedom involved in the system. There's so many bad methods, so many examples, they are not the same. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah. I'm not aware of a particular example that this Wiedemann-Franz law is precisely preserved. I'm not aware of such example, but maybe it exists, I'm not sure. There's just so many data, so many potential examples. Okay, so another thing I want to mention is that these ratios, okay, are independent of the scattering mean free path, okay, independent of this macroscopic detail. No matter you have a good metal or bad metal, as long as you have this type of ratio after the crossover, it is kind of evidence for the charge characterization. Okay, so this is the simplest example. And in the following, I'm going to tell you a closely related, but a lot more complicated example of charge personalization. So this is the pattern construction. You can write each electron as a product of n fermionic patterns, and n is an odd integer. So the fermion statistic is preserved. And the electron operator is invariant under the SUN rotation of all the patterns under fundamental presentation. Okay, so the SUN gauge redundancy will give rise to the emergent dynamical SUN gauge. And the SUN group can be hexed down to DN. And that's simply the previous example. Okay, if you want to consider the full SUN gauge group, there's it's rather complicated due to the fact that in the Fermi surface state is going to be strongly a renormalized gapless gauge fluctuation. Right? So the Fermi surface plus U1 gauge field has been considered by many people over the years, and many important works by Sanchik, Subia, Sancho, many other people. So we need the generalization to Fermi surface and SUN gauge field. Okay. I do not have time to present all the details of this theory, and I'm very happy to discuss at the end of the talk if you want to ask the details, like what type of RG or Lagrangian looks like at the end of the talk. So right now, I just have a very quick comment for the experts. The gluon self-interactions, gluon ghost interactions, and the fermion gluon interactions, other than this particular one, were irrelevant on the renormalization group. Right? This is very similar to the story of fermion surface and the U2 gauge field by Liu Jun and the Devangian in a very recent story.
Sorry. I guess I asked Liu Jun about SUN before, but I forgot his answer. So. Do you have to worry about pairing?
That's indeed a very good question. So in SUN case, there's always an attractive pairing channel. Okay? So due to the SUN gauge group, there are two types. Due to the SUN gauge fluctuations, there are two types of non-trivial flow. In one case, the pairing is unavoidable. No matter you have attractive or repulsive interaction in UV, it's unavoidable. There's a pairing. The other case, you have a stable non-free liquid fixed point and a repulsive. Another critical point represents the transition between this non-free liquid and the pairing.
When you say one case, another case, what's the difference?
Oh, the difference is that I should mention. So you have, for example, you have a color space and the flavor space. Say the color is SUN, and the flavor refers to your global symmetries, like a spin one up and down, for example.
Okay.
You could have a flavor anti-symmetric, color symmetric, or flavor symmetric, color anti-symmetric. So different pairing terms. So that's true in different cases. And I also want to mention that one case is unavoidable, right? But the pairing energy in this particular case, FUN has a 1 over n to a certain power suppression of the energy. So for certain n, I'm pretty sure the energy of the pairing can be lower than the energy scale of the non-fermion liquid. So we could have a non-fermion liquid within the temperature window, which is higher than the pairing temperature and lower than the confinement temperature. So these non-fermion liquid physics should exist, even that there are some unavoidable pairing instability.
I see. So did you say that happens for sufficiently large n or what?
Yeah, I haven't numerically checked, and the value does not have to be very large n. So there are two parameters here. One is the value of n, the other is the epsilon. Sorry, I should define the epsilon. If epsilon is the difference between the dynamic exponent of the boson and then the spatial dimension two. Okay, so this epsilon should equal to one in the physical setup. But people do epsilon expansion anyway and extrapolate back to one. Okay, so one epsilon is very close to one in the pairing instability calculation. The n can be three in order to have a separation between the pairing and non-fermion liquid energy already. So n equals three is already good if epsilon equals to one. But you may worry about if epsilon is equal to one, if your calculation valid at all. Okay, if the epsilon is smaller than one, for example, if you take, I check like 0.7, 0.8, when n equals to five, it's already okay. So what I mean is that if the calculation is self-consistent, the n equals to some finite small value is already good to have a non-fermion liquid fixed point physics within a temperature window.
Okay.
Just to make sure, so do you mean that at sufficiently low temperature, it always flows to superconducting state? Do you mean that?
Yes. I think you are right, because the pairing instability is unavoidable. In SUN, there's always two channels exist. The one is a pairing, one is attractive, the other is a repulsive, and it's always exists the pairing instability. This is different from U1. This is different from the U1 case.
Oh, so for any choice of NF flavor and epsilon, is that the statement?
No. Sorry, I should mention it's only there's always exists a particular channel that the pairing stability is unavoidable. Then there are other channels. Because the combination of the flavor and the color, you could have different types of pairing terms. Only one of them is unavoidable. Only one of them due to the gauge field fluctuation. That's the contribution from gauge field mediated pairing, not from the BCS type of term in the UV.
So you mean for n greater than two or greater or equal to two?
For three, should it be old? Three.
For n greater or equal to three,
for n. And the epsilon is one. If you believe the epsilon can extrapolate to one, the three is good.
But suppose you have control for small epsilon, and then in that case, for any flavor number, there's always pairing instability. Is that the statement?
Yeah. SUN always pairing instability. Yes. Yeah, it's a very good point about Bai Chong. Yeah. Thanks for asking this. I didn't mention in the slides. yeah, very good.
So can I ask, do you have with Fermi servers coupled to gauge fields, it's somewhat challenging to find a perturbative expansion that's actually controlled. Are you actually doing that here, or how are you getting attaining results?
Yeah, so if I didn't mention all these details to save time, but certainly, if we only consider epsilon expansion and epsilon equals to one, it's not really controlled. So we just did what people have developed using the method that people have developed and believe the epsilon expansion. And you can certainly question if this is valid. Certainly, we do not know how to fully control for the optional equals to one and the finite flavor number. We do not know how to control. It's a famously hard problem.
So since you mentioned some details, so how do you tune epsilon?
Let me go to a backup slide probably. So since the same as people have done before, this is the down dot damping, and the second term is the should be two as a d equals to three in our case, and the epsilon is defined by difference between the dynamic exponent of the gauge boson and the spatial dimension two. We simply use this result, and I can briefly mention the result of the SUN, because the significant simplification from the gluon and the gluon ghost and the fermion gluon interactions are all irrelevant. It effectively looks like a Abelian theory after this simplification, and you have multiple copies. It looks like you have multiple copies of Abelian gauge theory, and then the total number of the gauge field is the dimension of the non-Abelian gauge group, which is n squared minus one in this case. And just start from there, and you can do everything parallel to what people have done before using the U1 gauge field. Just apply to the S1 case.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for asking. It's an important point in this theory. Okay, so finally using this RG calculation, epsilon expansion, you can show the dynamical exponent is flow to some other value than one, and you no longer have a quasi-particle still well-defined from the surface. And we can calculate the transport properties of this theory, and to make the discussion simple, we still assume the impurity scattering is insensitive to temperature. This is because we want to get some ratio without worrying about the impurity dependence in temperature. So if this is the case, then in the deconfined phase, the parton transport has a factor n enhancement comparing to electron transport in the confinement temperature. Okay. So this is an impurity contribution. And the second term, the T to the fourth third is from the gauge field and the fermion scattering, okay, at the deconfinement phase, very low temperature. And this channel does not exist at high temperature because the gauge field is confined. And for thermal conductivity, similar as a factor n for the impurity contribution and for the to the thermal conductivity, and there's another term T to the two-third power from the gauge field and the fermion gathering. Okay. So if we are looking at the low temperature transport and the dominant term is from impurity, we still have this behavior of the thermal power. Okay, the ratio 1 over n, and then the ratio 1 over n squared for the Lorentz number for the dominant impurity scattering. So this is a common feature of both Dn case and Su1 case.
Sorry, I was under the impression, I could be wrong, I was under the impression that the calculating transport coefficient with temperature dependence for this Fermi surface plus gauge field problem is a pretty subtle one. So how did you do it?
I think you mentioned a good point. I think recently probably Patrick wrote a paper, questioned his own calculation previously. So what we used is Patrick's old calculation. The question by Patrick is that, okay, we have a system, okay? We have a system with fermion and a boson, and without on-clock scattering or any, what I mean is that for this particular term, right, so for the scattering of gauge boson and the fermion. Okay, so for this term, his question is that, okay, so we have boson and the fermion, But without breaking translation symmetry, where is the momentum relaxation? Where is the momentum go? Why in the scattering could it be, why in the scattering contributed to the resistivity at all? Okay, so this is his question. And certainly we are not really solving this problem. So conceptual understanding of where this is from is that, okay, so the fermion is scattered with the boson. And then the boson is behave like a thermal bath in your calculation, which will give rise to the reaction, the back reaction to the fermion. So from there, we get this resistivity. And where is the momentum of the boson go? Okay, so that's an important piece of information. And we simply assume probably the boson, the momentum carried by the boson is due to impurity or some other mechanism get lost. So the total system have a momentum relaxation. And for the fermion, the resistivity calculation, we just assume the boson serves like a thermal bath. So this is indeed a subtle question. It's not fully solved, I think, about this transfer.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, so, thanks, Chong.
Just want to previously you assumed the gauge field to be Zn, and now you assume it's Sun.
Good. Yeah. So there are two examples. The first example is the linearly free fermion proton gas Zn. Second example is Sun. Yeah. There are two gauge groups. One is gapped, so that's not really scattered with the fermion. The other one is gapless, so it will contribute to the transport. Yeah.
I guess you want to assume Sun because you want to have fractional temperature dependence of various quantities.
So it's simple. The simple reason is that we want to each proton carries a fractional charge E over N. The simple is the distribution.
From here, you can break Sun to Un to Zn, as you said. But you are not doing that. Is it because you want to get some T to the 4/3, those fractional power law?
So this is not the purpose, but the result. We are not really looking at any particular material, any experimental data at this stage. It's a simple construction, and we think Zn and Sun are two typical construction with important features. That's why we consider Sun. There's no other reason. Just a toy model. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you for asking. So these two cases both have the same types of the E over N charge, fractional charge carried by protons, and they have different dynamics due to the gauge fields are very different. Let's hope. So there are two examples, and there's no other motivation other than the theoretical exploration. There's another second part of the talk is targeting material specific system and this is the monolayer tunnel line on constant fermion line. It's a two layer structure without any twisting angle. There's a Murray super lattice due to the 7% lattice mismatch. In this material, the local Coulomb repulsion is much larger than the Hawking energy. Okay, so this is an ideal platform to simulate strongly correlated physics. And the bands are topologically trivial, which means there's no Abelian obstruction in such a system. So it's perfect to realize Hubbard model physics on triangular light. How many degrees of freedom per site due to a strong spin-off coupling, which is typically hundreds of milli electron volts from single layer, which means the spin quantum number and the valid quantum number are locked together. Okay? So we only have 2 degrees of freedom per site. And the experiment, T people have seen a continuous method to insulate transition by tuning the bandwidth at the half genie. Okay. This is potentially an interaction driven transition, at least claimed by the experimental paper. Okay. So the strong evidence is that the half band filling density is two orders of magnitude much larger than disorder density.
Okay, so this half band filling is half band of the Murray band.
Per Murray unit cell triangle lattice
Yeah. And when you say disorder density, you are also measuring the density in units of the Murray scale.
Yes, I think so. In a paper, I think so. And this is a whole doping. So it's a the spell of the coupling, that's a subtly spell of the coupling is smaller in the conduction band, but very big in valence band. It's whole doping. It's like what I mean that is like one hole for unit cell. Okay, one hole per unit cell in the Murray scale, Murray scale. Okay, so if you believe this is an interaction driven continuous transition, then the observed value of this resistivity jump at a critical point is much larger than the known universal values within the current understanding. I will explain in detail what I mean by this sentence in the following. So this is the roadmap of the following discussion in case you get lost. There are many concepts. So in order to tell you the universal resistivity jump, I need to first discuss the universal resistivity at the superfluid to insulate the transition of charged boson. And after introducing.
Can I ask a question? Go back one slide.
Sorry.
So is there solid evidence suggesting that this jump is actually universal? Did they try it on different samples and so on?
No, only in this. Okay, so it's universal within central construction, but that's from theoretical understanding. This is universal. You mean if they have different samples? No, we only have this. There's another different sample. It's not from this modern tunnel line or tungsten solid line. There's a different sample. There's a twisted bilayer structure. And then their jump is not large. In this particular one, it's large. So the universal is respect to our certain theoretical model. So your critical theory predicts a universal jump. And different material may have different critical theories. So that's not that universal in this sense.
Okay. At least for this particular system, I can say that experimentally, the universality of this jump has not been verified, right?
That's the point. Thank you.
Thanks,
Chong. Very good question. Okay, so the roadmap. After introducing all the concepts, I will try to understand the big jump in this transition metal better coordinate. Okay, so for superfluid insulator transition, it's a Landau symmetry breaking transition, which has a bosonic order parameter description and one order parameter is gapped or condensed at two different phases. And in the quantum critical regime, we have the Wilson Fisher conformed field theory. And it gives the concept of universal conductivity, which is the conductivity quantum times dimensionless universal scaling function, which is the function of frequency divided by temperature. And I also want to mention very importantly, this won't be possible without particle Hall symmetry. Okay? So in ordinary transport, we know that finite conductivity always needs an impurity or own club scattering in order to have momentum relaxation. But in a CFT with particle Hall symmetry, we no longer need this order or own club anymore. The simple reason is that if you have a particle moving to the right, and the hole moving to the left, the total momentum is actually zero, but the electrical current is non-zero. Right? You can clearly see the overlap between the momentum current and the electrical current is actually zero. So you no longer need momentum relaxation. So this is why we can have a conductivity that is fully determined by the universal information of the critical point. Okay, so this is good, but fully determine the shape of the scaling function is actually challenging using conventional field theory method. Okay, so only under the two limits, when the frequency is much higher than temperature, or the frequency is much lower than temperature, people have calculated the two values using methods like small epsilon expansion or large N expansion or numerical methods like quantum Monte Carlo or conformal bootstrap.
Can I ask a question? You statement about particle hole symmetry. Do you really mean that that you should be at half filling? Do you actually need an exact particle hole symmetry, or is it just a filling?
This is the integer filling of Bose-Hubble model. So at a critical point at low energy, it has emergent particle hole symmetry. If you go to high energy, it's possible there's some excitation. Bricks. It's not exact symmetry, but the emergent symmetry of the critical point in the CFT. We have particle hole symmetry.
Sorry, I'm also confused here. You're talking about triangle lattice with the fermion model. What particle hole symmetry do you mean?
I'm not talking about the Morais polarized point, but this is simply the superfluid insular transition of Bose-Hubble model. At integer filling level.
Oh, that, okay, sorry. Okay, that.
This is some background. This is a background. Oh, okay.
Sorry, okay.
Thanks for the question. Yeah, the background information, some concepts for preparation. So these are the values that people have obtained over the years. Of both high frequency result and low frequency zero DC conductivity result. And then maybe we can trust the high frequency conductivity, which is 0.36 from conformal bootstrap, or the DC conductivity close to one from. And this is a consistent experiment and theoretical result. So, all the one. Okay, so finally, you can see that the resistivity. Under the two limits, it's not going to be big, just the order one quantity in terms of the resistivity quantum. Then we are ready. We are ready to consider the interaction driven metal insulator transition, which involves spin charge separation. So you have fermionic spin on and a bosonic charge on, and then there's another emergent U1 gauge field due to the U1 redundancy. And very importantly, this bosonic sector is dynamically decoupled from the spin on gauge sector and will undergo a slow fluid to insulate the transition, which will drive a transition, which will drive this metal insulator transition. So simply when the boson is gapped, you are left with a spin on fermion surface. This is a spin liquid metal insulator. When a charge on condense, the small A is Higgs. And you are left with electron from surface. And physically, this transition can be tuned by the bandwidth of the electron. Okay, so this is probably pretty well known for many of you. So sorry for being so slow. So we can look at the details of the behavior of the resistivity. Okay, so the total resistivity is given by the Eiffel locking rule and the contributions from both fermions and bosons. From the insulator side, the boson's resistivity is infinity, and in the metal side, the boson's resistivity is zero. So that's probably boring value, but right at the critical point, we have already seen that's a universal value associated with the boson. So this will give rise to a jump right at the critical point. And if you are interested in a detailed values, we can look at the paper from 2012. The high frequency result is given by the ground state property given by the Wilson-Fischer CFT result. It's around 3.5. Okay. And the DC resistivity, which is going to be measured by experiment, has the contribution from both Wilson feature safety and the thermally activated damped gauge. This is a subtle point. You have to consider thermal activated scattering events. It's not really purely from ground state property. Okay, so this is around 8 times the resistivity quantum. Okay, so in any case, the jump is not going to be significantly larger than this other one. Any question about this? I recall there's a question about this plot at the beginning in the introduction.
I have a question, but I will ask at the end.
I'm scared. Okay. Okay, I will continue then. Okay, so then we are really motivated by this material of a modern tunnel line and constant solid line. So this larger jump seems beyond this construction that I have just mentioned. Okay, so then we propose a new construction. Okay, so the new ingredient is that we introduce two charged bosons for each. You could say valley or spin because they lock together. So 2 degrees freedom per side. Okay, so up and down. Okay, so two bosons, and so in this construction, there's a time reversal symmetry that interchange the two valley or spin. Okay, but there's no SU2 rotation. So accordingly, there are two emergent gauge fields. Associated with two flavor numbers. Okay, so the two copies of the charged boson will undergo superfluid to insulate the transition simultaneously. This is guaranteed by time reversal symmetry. And this construction will give rise to a large resistivity jump. I'm going to explain why this is necessarily happen in this new construction. And the important difference is the filling of the charged boson. Okay? So for electron and half filling in the conventional construction, the bosons are at the integer filling. Okay? So the multi insulator of the charged boson can be trivially gapped. But in a new construction, both bosons are at half filling. And according to the LSM theorem, the multi insulator of the boson cannot be trivially gapped. So we are left with two possibilities. One is topological order, and the other is commensurate density wave, which spontaneously breaks translation symmetry. Okay, so both cases can be most conveniently formulated using the dual vortex theory. So we just pick up one of the bosons. There are two of them, okay, and the time reversal. Only one of them we pick up, and the formulation. It's a vortex of the B coupled to a dynamical U1 gauge field cap A, which is a dual Dirac-Lorentz mode of the superfluid of the B. Okay, so then the metal insulator transition becomes the Higgs transition. When the vortex condense, you have the multi insulator of the boson B, which is the multi insulator of the electrons. And then the photon phase corresponds to the superfluid phase of the charge ion, and that's the metal phase of the electron. Okay. So the two cases that I have mentioned, the two possibilities according to different condensation of the vortex theory. Okay. So the condensation of the n vortex bound state at zero momentum will give you a Zn topological order. And then the condensation of the vortex at the finite momentum, which breaks translation symmetry, that's the density wave state. And then the second case is pretty similar to all the story by Anton and Liang about the superfluid insulator transition of Bose-Hubbard model at fractional filling. Okay, so now I'm going to be more specific about these two cases. Okay, so case one, the critical theory looks like this. So the precise field carries the total n charge under the U1 capital A, and this is the bound state on the field. So when the Poisson condense, the U1 gauge field will be Higgs down to Zn topological order. And this charge-on sector, bosonic sector, is dynamically decoupled from phenon surface. And you clearly see it involves charge fractionalization. And the charge carrier is the anion of the Zn topological order with fractional charge E over N. Okay. And we can calculate the D universal DC resistivity of the anion, right? So, which is 7.9 H divided by E star, and this is fractional charge square for each anion. And what's the total species is two, because we have two copies of the critical theory related by time reversal. Right, so total, in total, the resistivity jump would scale as n power two time resistivity quantum. So it could be much larger than the old theory because of the enhancement by this fractionalization at a critical point.
But sorry, which values of n are allowed by the Lipschitz-Mass theorem? Is it any even n?
Yeah, very good, very good. Every even number is allowed because of the pi flux on the dual lattice, which is due to the half filling of the boson. Any even number is very good.
So n could just be two, and then that probably wouldn't be enough to explain this jump, right?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree. Yes. So from theory, we can only say n can be any even integer, but in principle, it could also be big, right? But this can be determined from experiment. You can measure the charge gap versus tunneling. I will mention that. What I mean is that from theory, we can say the n can be any even integer, which could be determined from experiment by certain measurements I will mention later. And hopefully, the n is large, which could explain this large jump. But you are right. Purely from this construction, if n is only two, this is not that big. I agree.
But so just looking at the size of a jump, what does that suggest n would have to be?
You mean from experimental data?
Yeah.
Let's see. So this is probably let's see. Probably the n in this to be like 8 something. 8 or 10. 6 is probably, yeah. Probably need to be as large as 8. That's a lot, yeah. 6 or 8.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, sharp eyes. Yeah, thank you. Another case. Okay, so the vortex final structure have a minima in the Brillouin zone. Okay, so that's where the vortex condense and breaks the transition symmetry. So the critical theory should be written in terms of this no energy field. Okay, so in total, you have n components for the critical theory. And very interestingly, we also, in this case, we also have charge fractionalization at the critical point. Because you can see this is a lambda forbidden transition between two symmetry breaking phases. In one phase, you have translation symmetry breaking, and on the other phase, you have a blue fluid. Okay. So the charge carrier is actually the vertex perpetuata of each perpetuata with the fractional charge. There are total n of them. Okay. So each one has a fractional charge. Okay. And we can calculate the DC resistivity of each perpetuata. Which has an expression rather complicated. I'm just showing here it's larger than this one and does not scale with n. Okay. And what's the total species? Okay. How many perpetuata in this case? It's actually 2n because in each theory we have n components and there are two of them under time reversal, okay. Two critical theories. So 2n. Okay. So then we can calculate the total universal resistivity jump. And you can see a scale with n. It's not n square. So not in last example, it's n square, but in this example, it's n because in the total species scale. Okay. But in any case, this is still a big enhancement comparing to the standard construction.
So is n here the factor by which the inner cell increases from the density wave, or is that different?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear very clearly because the connection. And could you repeat the question?
Is n the same as the factor by which the unit cell is increasing from the density wave?
Yeah. Let me show you. Actually, I have a backup slide. If you ask. So we have a band structure of the vertex, right? We'll have vertex band structure, and this is doubly degenerative. And we have already have found some examples like n equals to 6, or n could be as large as 12. So this is the place that the vertex will condense, and so the n is determined by the band structure.
But there are some hard constraints from the lattice symmetry, right? You cannot choose arbitrary n, right? And you cannot put n to like 100, right?
Maybe 100 is impossible. Okay, so you're right.
Theoretically, it's impossible, right? Because
you need to check. Okay, so good question. So you need to check if the degeneracy is protected by PSD. I think that's the point. So the PSD of the triangular lattice for the n equals to 6 example, we have verified this degeneracy is protected by the triangular lattice symmetry. We have checked that. And for this n equals to 12 example, we so far have the band structure, and we're still working to prove it is protected by the triangular lattice PSG. But certainly 100 is huge. And
maybe I can imagine that because triangular has C6 symmetry, so then it's okay to have 6-fold or 12-fold because it has high flux, right? But beyond that is probably impossible, right?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree. Probably not 100 and then not. Yeah, I agree.
So these different cases just correspond to different hardenings that you take for the vortices.
Nearest
neighbor, next neighbor. Okay.
Yeah. Just the tuning, the hopping, and the ratio. Just that. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it's similar to your old work. you are the pioneer for this field.
Okay. Thank you. So for this 12 case, so you have many points. So in the lower right figure, you have many points in the Brillouin zone. And then is it correct that none of them are at high symmetry momenta?
It's not a high symmetry moment. Go ahead.
The degeneracy is protected.
I haven't checked if they are really protected. We are still working on that. So the 6 is safe. 6 we have verified already. And for the 12, we are still working on that.
My opinion is it's possible that they can be protected. And there's no problem of having something like 120.
Oh, really?
They don't have to be on the high symmetry points.
I guess you're saying if it's incommensurate, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds plausible.
Oh, you need like you need to fine tune like different operator, right?
Why? If you are at incommensurate momenta, what do you need to fine tune? You just move the
here. That this n is just like the number of the minima of the band structure.
Yeah.
So then you can have some symmetry to relate different minima, right?
Yeah.
But for the minima that are not related by symmetry, then you need to fine tune it.
Yeah, but I don't think having 120 has any problem. There may be an issue making 100.
You only have C6 to relate like 6 different minima. Here you have pi flux, probably you can double the number, but that's all you can do, I think.
Why do you think you only have pi flux?
Because the boson is at half filling, so then the vortex says pi flux.
Why? Doesn't that depend on what kind of vortex?
Yeah. I guess we should not discuss that.
What kind of flux you have depends on n.
Sorry?
What kind of flux you have depends on n. It's not just determined by, is it right? Or does it depend on? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, maybe that's discuss it later. Sorry.
I think maybe it's possible to design very complicated structure have even 112 minima, but we make sure it's protect. What I mean is that it's protected by the degeneracy is protected by the lack of symmetry. Otherwise, the symmetry allows the breaking term to gap out. Probably let me continue the talk. I think is it a 1 hour talk? Is that a time constraint for the?
How much time do you need?
I think I'm pretty close to the end because two theories has already been introduced. I only have two slides.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So they can be experimentally distinguished.
So in case two, do you know whether the dynamical decoupling occurs?
Oh yeah, that's another good question. Yeah, very good. Yeah. So let me see. So let me. Where is my backup slide? Okay. So let me first introduce tell the audience what do we mean by dynamical decouple. Okay. So because there's some potentially back reaction from the spin on from the surface to the bottom to the critical theory of the vortex that we presented, but there could be back reaction. How to justify that decoupled? Okay, so for example, for this type of order parameter, the boson B square or an elliptic order, it will have a non-dual damping term generated by the spin on from the surface. We really need to check the scaling dimension of this order parameter at the critical theory of the boson. Okay, so if this is a Lomov dimension larger than two, it is decoupled, and that's satisfied by the XY transition. And it's also possible to have a density wave order in a second case of the for the density wave state. So due to the coupling to the Fermi surface, you could have this term generated, and one need to check. If the Lomov dimension is larger than two, or the Fermi vector is not equal to the density wave vector. So if all of these are satisfied, then we can safely say it's dynamically decoupled. So this is a criterion. And in our specific example, we want to address the density wave coupling. I think Liu Jun's point is very good because we have a large Fermi surface at half thinning, right? So it's entirely possible to have hot spots due to the density wave. It's possible. So we want to address this question by considering the following theory by doing the Hubbard-Chernovich transformation for density wave. What I mean is that the capital phi presents the density wave, and they include the other terms in the standard CPN model. So we want to do certain Nagyian calculation to address the hotspot problem. Hopefully, we are still working on that. We need to check all the PSD allowed terms of the vortex. So there are two possibilities. Number one, we indeed have a CFT in IR, and then that's very good. We have this fixed point, and we can check the scaling dimension whether this is decoupled or not. We can tell, and it's also possible we do not have a CFT in IR, and then that's not probably a first order transition. I'm not sure. So we are working on addressing the density wave problem. This is a good question, and we are still working on it. Yeah, thanks, Liu Jun. Yeah, so very important. And so decoupling is important. But I also want to mention, even it is not a decoupled, as long as you have a CFT, you can still calculate the universal resistivity, which will be a different value for R tilde will be a different value if you have a CFT. And there's still an enhancement. We're just not sure about the exact value at this stage. Hopefully, it will be even larger. We are still trying to figure out.
I think here, when you calculate the resistivity, you use the LV locking rule. So the total electron resistivity is the sum of boson resistivity and the fermionic particle resistivity.
Yes.
The dynamical decoupling doesn't occur. You can't really use it, right? You can't easily use it.
I see. You're asking if it is not decoupled. We can. Okay. So let me say it this way. So for the Eiffel locking rule, it is from the gauge constraint, right? It's not from any. As long as you have a precise description of both sectors, you can calculate both sectors. But the Eiffel locking rule is still valid. I think. What I mean is that the summation between the two parts, this is from the gauge constraint. It's not from any dynamical, it's a non-perturbative statement. So we have an Eiffel locking rule in the tauton construction. We just need to calculate both parts, and the both parts is hard to determine if it is not a dynamical decoupling. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, but indeed, as you mentioned, if it is not decoupled, then it's hard to calculate both parts. I agree. That would be a very hard problem. Yeah. So I will continue only two slides after this. Okay, so they can be experimentally distinguished because they have a sharp difference in the Mohr insulator side. In the topological order, charge carriers are still deconfined. Okay, but in the density wave state, the U1 gauge field that couples to the charge carrier will confine even at zero temperature. This is due to the condensation of the monopole, which carries lattice transition symmetry. So only one of them is fractionized and the other is not in the model insert side. And we can design.
Maybe I missed it. I thought you have a spin on Fermi surface. So why do you say the U1 gauge field is going to confine?
Good question. That's a different. Two different U1 gauge field. This is the U1. Okay. So this U1 gauge field, I have a backup slide. So the charge carrier is the vortex of the vortex. Okay? So the density of the vortex is the flux of the other gauge field. For example, I'm talking about another U1 gauge field, not the one. The small a is the one shared by spinon and chargeon. And I'm talking about a different gauge field that is coupled to the charge carrier, which is the vortex of the vortex, and the fractionized degree. That one will confine. I'm assuming the small a is not confined. I'm assuming that self is spin on from the surface, always.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. So experimentally we can distinguish in it. Okay, so we can measure the tunneling gap from the tunneling spectroscopy and the transport gap from the finite temperature resistivity from the thermal activation. Okay, so the tunneling gap in a topological order case will have a factor n times larger than transport gap. Because only electron, the gauge invariant quantity, can tunnel. But in the second case, the tunneling gap simply equals to transport gap, which is charge and electron charge gap. And we can dope the motor insulator to a metallic state. So you start from motor insulator and dope it and it become a metallic state. And according to our construction, it will have a linear T resistivity from the scattering of charged boson, and that gauge field little a shared with the spin off Fermi surface. And due to the confinement crossover of this CN gauge field, the slope of the linear T resistivity will have an n factor after the confinement in the first case. But in the second case, there's no confinement crossover at all. So this sharp difference between these two proposals.
Sorry. Do you mean in CentOS original paper there's a regime with linear resistivity?
It's different because in the DN topological order case, you are not going to have in the nearby phase is a non-fermi liquid, not a marginal fermi liquid. So this calculation linearity is from the gauge field A has a dynamical exponent 3 instead of 2. This is based on Patrick's of the calculation. Okay. So maybe let me show this. So this is my expectation for the two different cases. You can see a difference from case one, case two, in the nearby region of the quantum criticality, because the dynamic exponent of the gauge boson small a is different in two cases. So some subtleties.
So in which regime do you have linear T?
Linear T is from the dynamical, okay. So the linear T is from the scattering of the charged boson and gauge field A. And this A has a dynamical exponent C equals to 3 or epsilon equals to 1 in the calculation.
But this, and the boson is a non-relativistic boson.
Oh, you're asking that? Yeah. Sorry, I should mention. Yeah. So after doping, it's not at a critical point at all. So it's non-relativistic boson. Yeah. That's right.
But this situation was also studied in CentOS paper. Do you mean there is a regime with linear T resistivity?
Which is CentOS paper? CentOS has so many papers related. You mean
just one in 2008 theory of continuous mode transitions in two dimensions.
I think the difference is that in the dynamical exponent of the little a in central construction is 2, right? Do you agree? Because the boson, the gauge boson propagator has a contribution from relativistic boson.
So CentOS paper studied two transitions. One is what he calls bandwidth controlled. That's what
you mean the other one. I agree. I think that should be the case. In my understanding, that should be the case. Okay.
You mean in that case, there's a linear T resistivity?
I need to check the other case in detail, but if you agree all these exponents, I think it should, what I mean is dynamic exponents and the non-relativistic boson, and if you agree all the dynamical behavior of the critical theory, then it should, and I need to check the central paper again.
Sorry, I missed where you expect to get linear T resistivity. Is this some intermediate T behavior that you're talking about?
Just slightly doping from the mode insulator at a low temperature. And they're scattering between the charged boson due to your doping, right? You dope electron because the system is a fractionized system. So there will be some dilute boson gas in your system, and it will scatter with the gapless gauge field A, which is shared with the spin-off surface. So let's where this linear T are from. There are certainly other contributions, like for example, you have a spin-off Fermi surface contribution, but which is T to the 4/3, is higher power than linear T. And there's also scattering between spin-off Fermi surface and dilute boson. That should be T to the 3/2. It's higher power than linear T. So at low temperature, the dominant P side from this scattering between charged boson and this gauge field.
Xiaoxuan, maybe it's useful to go to slide 59.
You have a good memory. So which one? 59?
I think Dominic is asking whether you can point to the regime or those among all those crossover regimes, can you point out which one has linear T?
Oh, it's not in this plot because this is at a fixed affinity. This is at a fixed affinity. I'm talking about due to some properties of the quantum critical regime and your dope. I see your question. You are asking in which region and we start doping, right? You're asking that. Okay, so it's the multi-insulator region. It's the spin on non-frame surface, non-frame liquid region, which is the dynamical gauge field small a has dynamical exponent c equals to 3. So this from there, from the spin on non-frame liquid, and you dope the system and make it a metallic state.
Now I got confused. I thought maybe I'm wrong, but I thought in your theory, even in case one, you should have the figure like case two.
Why is that? The CN gauge field is gapped, right?
Yeah, but in Santos' case, he just had a Z1 gauge field. He already has case two. Z1 gauge field is no gauge field. I mean, he has a Z1 gauge field and his crossover diagram is like case two in this slide. And the figure in case one corresponds to his chemical potential tuned transition.
But in Santos construction, he's talking about a different transition, not a topological order to a fluid condition, right? So he's talking about what I mean is that we have different transition of the boson factor.
It's just a 3D XY star, right?
Yeah, XY star, yeah.
Is that?
But the in my understanding, the small a from the spin off from the surface is coupled to the capital A.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe there could be a difference.
And the condensation is the vortex, which is coupled to the capital A. The vortex is under XY star. And this is a capital A is the DN gauge field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. So there are many subtleties. Yeah. Thank you for asking. I think I'm over. So this is a recap. I'm already well close to the end. So this is a recap. So within our construction, the observed big resistivity jump could be potentially explained by charge fractionalization, and there are two cases within our theory. And I also want to mention is another work later by Santil and Devanjian and they have a construction of a different filling, electron filling factor in such a transition, in different transition method that you coordinate. And they also involve charge fractionalization due to the similar reason in our case too. Okay. So this is a summary. I just end here. I just leave the summary here and I'm happy to take any other questions.
Okay, thank you, Xiaochuan. So there have been many questions, but there are more question?
Can I ask?
Yeah, sure.
I want to come back to the point of, can you go back one slide?
This one?
Yeah. I just want to go back to this point. So you see in this experiment, there's a curve labeled by EC. And
let me check, EC, okay, yeah. EC.
This curve, you can see, from temperature range, maybe 4 to 5 Kelvin until the highest temperature of this figure, it's more or less like a power law. And below 4 or 5 Kelvin, it saturates at a finite temperature, a finite value. So there seems to be some crossover happening around 4 to 5 Kelvin.
You are meaning this behavior is different from this behavior? Is that what you mean? How do you tell? I mean, this is a very small, let me zoom in. How do you tell?
It looks like one is concave, the other is convex.
Yeah.
From there it's a different.
Yeah, but suppose you don't look at the data below 4 to 5 Kelvin and only look at data above that temperature, you will think at the critical point, the resistivity just increases indefinitely when you decrease the temperature.
You mean this is a big increase right here?
Decrease the temperature suppose you don't look at data below 4 to 5 Kelvin, it appears the resistivity just increases indefinitely.
Oh, you mean it will behave like this? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. My personal understanding of this data is the high temperature behavior is related to the transition. Meaning the if there is a really a continuous transition here, the zero temperature resistivity corresponding to the transition is actually infinite.
But Liu Jun, if I take your standard, then many of the conductors are actually also insulators at higher temperatures. I mean the curve below the EC one, if I take your standard, that also looks like an insulator.
Yeah, so then I need to justify why I think looking at temperature range between 4 to 5 Kelvin to 70 Kelvin is good. This is justified by a figure in this paper in the appendix. They fitted the data of resistivity in the same range, in that range of temperature, and they already found a power law, a relative power law. So, and also it appears to me all the evidence for having a continuous phase transition already occurs in this relatively high temperature range. So I think this temperature range can already be attributed to the transition.
But then you will need to explain the low temperature thing as some other stuff happening.
It can always be disorder or even say instability to other states.
Well, a disorder that makes an insulator to a conductor.
But this is a gapless insulator somehow.
Okay, I see what you mean.
Yeah, so my understanding of this transition, my theoretical understanding, I don't have any theoretical understanding of this transition, but my picture is pretty different from any center-based picture.
Do you have any proposal?
I don't really have any.
Yeah, this is okay. So yeah, and also something interesting here, right? It's going up and going down. So
yeah, but for the curve labeled EC, they already fitted the power law at relatively high temperature. So I think that can be. So if, for example, if you go to slide 59 again, so in the crossover figure, you see there's this quantum critical regime. Suppose you are not really at a quantum critical point. You are not really right above the critical point. You are slightly away. Then you will see at very high temperature, the behavior looks like the critical point. And below some crossover scales, it becomes something different.
I know.
Now I want to feed this picture to that data. And it appears to me the quantum critical behavior is above 4 to 5 Kelvin.
So at a particular value of a coupling, you should have a quantum critical behavior down to zero temperature, right? According to this picture?
Yes.
And are you saying that that's not what is observed in experiments?
In experiments, there are two possibilities. One is that EC is not really tuned at the critical point. The other is this critical point somehow is unstable due to some other physics. And this is familiar, the second possibility.
What is in the experiment not compatible with just it being the quantum critical point?
What do you mean?
I mean, you seem to want to say that the zero temperature behavior in the experiment is not the quantum critical
point. If we go to the data, it appears the behavior of the resistivity above and below 4 to 5 Kelvin are very different.
He means like something like this. Quantum critical regime is at
So there are two possibilities. One is the EC curve is not really at EC, assuming that critical point is stable. The other is the critical point itself may not be stable, and EC may really be the critical point. But when you go down in temperature, below a certain temperature, the physics is no longer controlled by the critical point.
Well, you have disorders, right? So, I mean, presumably for a metal without disorder, as we were talking about before, the resistivity would actually be zero at zero temperature. But in fact, you see finite resistivity is obviously telling you that it comes from disorder. So, I mean, that's, but I mean, that's the case for all metals. But I mean, maybe that's kind of what you're saying, that the disorder is controlling the very low temperature physics.
No, but I don't think your scenario applies here. If it's your scenario, then the temperature at the resistivity at high temperature should increase when you increase temperature. Here, my real point is really between 4 Kelvin and 70 Kelvin, they can already filter relatively good power law. This means I would interpret this as evidence for the quantum critical regime. And if then I just extrapolate this behavior to zero temperature, I will see that zero temperature resistivity is infinite.
Yeah, well, that's sure. And then the here it's cut off by disorder.
So previously, when I said disorder, I mean maybe the critical point is unstable due to disorder at a very low temperature.
Well, the metal is in some sense unstable to disorder in the sense that, you know, it's not described by Fermi liquid fixed point anymore. But, and so, in the, you know, maybe the critical point is also in that sense. But normally we sort of just imagine that we consider the ideal clean case and we know that at very low temperatures for disorder is going to have an effect.
Yeah, but it doesn't apply here.
Why not?
I think you are imagining a scenario where the critical point has a zero resistivity without disorder, right?
I'm
saying without disorder, the critical point at zero temperature has an infinite resistivity.
You're saying it's an extrapolation of a high temperature behavior?
Yeah,
that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Even in the standard story, at the critical point in Sento's story, at the critical point there is a finite zero temperature resistivity. Just from the boson.
Yeah, but I think here it's from both the boson and the fermion. Okay, without disorder, it's just from the boson.
Yeah.
But I think here it seems to be infinite to me.
You're saying you take any of these curves at high temperature and extrapolate it, you think it will be infinite if you just fit a power law?
Not any of the curves, only the EC. So in this paper, in the appendices, the authors fit the resistivity at EC, both the temperature, and they found it scales as T to the negative 1.3.
Is the exponent different at EC compared to in the metric?
Yeah. And for not at EC, then if it's in the insulating set, it should be just exponential, it's not a power law. And in the metallic set, it's T squared at those temperatures. But at EC, it's T to the minus 1.3.
Yeah, but if you look at the figure on the metallic side, it's T squared only at very low temperature, right? It's at some higher temperature, some other thing.
At high temperature, presumably, it's again the quantum critical regime. That's just the usual physical picture for finite temperature crossing.
Oh, okay, I see what you mean.
So for all those curves at relatively high temperature, it should be the quantum critical regime. And at low temperatures, only if we are right above the critical point, we see the critical behavior persisting to a very low temperature, which could be interrupted by some other physics. And away from the critical point, when we go down from the finite temperature critical regime to low temperature, we will cross over to the insulating side or the metallic side.
So the only complaint you have is basically that the power law in the 40 to 7 Kelvin is the wrong one. Is that what you're saying?
No, I think Liuji's complaint is he doesn't want to take that delta rho seriously.
Yeah, he wants to comment. This is from a crossover of insulator.
I think my complaint is, I think below 4 to 5 Kelvin, the resistivity should not be attributed to the critical point.
Yeah, for that particular curve.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible that the resolution is not good enough. If you go to, if you further fine tune, there may be a better curve. That's...
That would be quite hard to be compatible with. They already found good fitting to a power law for that curve. It is, even if it's just away from the critical point, it's not too far away such that at relatively high temperature, I already see the quantum critical behavior.
Yeah. So if it is a really infinite at the critical point, we need new theory, I guess, right?
That's just my personal opinion. Xiaochuan, I think your theory as a theory per se is a fine theory. As a theory, I think it's a fine theory.
Thank you.
I think it's an interesting question. I guess one needs to see more refined experiments, but I guess there's no theory of such critical point yet, right?
Maybe not of this one. I don't know if there's a theory of metal insulated transition where the zero temperature resistivity at the transition is
infinite. I mean, yeah, I don't know any. Do you know any?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if disorder driven is possible to do that.
Yeah, but in the clean limit, I guess.
I mean, the experiment may not be that clean, right?
But if you just look at the high temperature.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, by definition at the critical point, if it's a continuous transition, the charge gap has to be zero, right? So.
Yeah, but, Anderson insulator has a zero charge gap.
I mean, we're talking about translation invariant case. Right? If you have a zero gap, it probably means that.
Sorry, I'm not sure whether the disorder in this particular experimental setup is really unimportant.
Okay, so maybe we should continue our discussion offline, and Lusion. If you are interested, Xiaochuan will be available tomorrow for meeting, and he's free noon to 1 or 6 to 7 as of now. So,
I just wanted to ask this question. I didn't really have more to say about this. I don't have any proposal.
Sure. Yeah, well, it's very, very, very interesting point. Yeah. Okay, so maybe we should thank Xiaochuan and for nice talk and discussion. And we all look forward to discussing more tomorrow. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank you. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Very interesting discussion. Thank you.